Portions of this hour brought to you by the Druid Irish Pub. 24 taps to choose from and the best steak sandwich in town. Jasper Evan, 116th. That's the Druid Irish Pub.
The Jason Greger Show, presented by Mobile One. Energy lives here on your home for Edmonton sports. TSN 1260.
Make your way home tonight on the drive. Be safe, be patient, and hopefully get there safely. Of course, Rick Pinter will ensure that you know which parts of the city to avoid. Also, as you're driving or maybe you're walking or listening, you're already at home, keep it in mind, 101260 is the number to text, or you can call Majot at 444-1260 to get in a bid for our package today. Month of Giving begins today, and it's a courtesy of the Base by RVH. You're getting a training program for 12 weeks, three times a week, two different options. You can either do the hockey dryland summer program for Bantam to college age players in June to August, or a 12-week power training program when you like for power sports or anyone looking to build strength and power. Only at the Base by RVH. They train a lot of pro athletes, so they're a great place. Also, two limited edition Oil Kings teddy bear toss jerseys and a pair of seats to the Oilers and the Stars on Friday night. George has it right now at only $1,100. That's not even face value on the training, folks. So let's get that up. It's for the Christmas Bureau. We've never in 5 years had a package that did not go for face value. So let's try to get that up today. Fantastic training packages by a lot of experts at the base, and the jerseys you can't buy and the tickets. So if you want in, text us at 101260 or call Majot at 444-1260. George has it at a steal right now at only $1,100. Very special guest joining me in studio. It was announced Thursday, that he will be going into the CFL Hall of Fame next Grey Cup. He played 11 seasons in the CFL. He won two Grey Cups. He was the most outstanding rookie in 1997. He holds the league record for most receptions in a year, 160. Ridiculous. Daryl Mookie Mitchell joins us in studio. Mook, how you doing?
I'm good.
100, like, were you a ball hog that year? What's going on?
No, it wasn't. it wasn't a ball hog. I just had a pass-happy offensive coordinator.
Wow, 160 catches, man. There's a lot of coordinators like to pass the ball. But, like, you're getting 10. Like, you played ball a lot, and you played, and that was your rookie. That was your second season in the league when you got 160. How banged up for you? Because if you had 160 catches, I'm guessing you had at least another 30 or 40 targets during the year. Like, you must have taken a lot of hits. Was that the most physically demanding season of your career?
It was. And it was more physically demanding, like, in practice, you know, because whenever we had an offensive session and it was time for the defense, I guess, to run their period, Coach Jenkins would always just pull me over to the side with Kerwin Bell, and he would just have me running screen plays and just all, like, quick slants and everything. So it's like I never, like, got a breather. So after every practice and every game, like, my legs, my body, it was just gone.
Well, obviously it didn't impact you. You had 2,000 yards. That after having 1,457. But did it have a toll? Because the next year you got injured, really the only time in your career. Mm-hmm. Was it kind of the onset delay injury, or was it not related at all, do you think, to the previous year of you having so many touches?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. That injury there, that ankle injury, was just like a bad injury. Like, I had, like, caught, like, a quick out, and the DB for BC, he just came up from behind, and I kind of, like, my body fell over his body. And so I was blessed that it was just, I was able to walk away with just a swollen ankle that just kept me out for like a game or two.
Okay. Now, you are the youngest of 11 kids, grew up in Miami, Florida. I know you told me you hadn't seen your dad really since you're 14 or 15, and your mom basically raised you herself. How did you come out of Miami? How did you get started in football? You know, was it something at a young age you felt like, this is my way out of here?
Yeah, and I think it was pretty much, it was the gift that my oldest brother saw. So I could just remember being like a 9-10 year old, and he would just like come get me up off the couch while I would be sitting inside watching cartoon, and he would take me to the park to play, you know, like sandlot football with him and his buddy. So I'm a 9-10 year old playing tackle football with like grown men, like 18-19-20 year olds. And so he, whenever he would just see me, like I said, in the streets, just playing catch with buddies, or we just playing streets with, you know, like my other peers, he just felt like I could, you know, take my game to the next level. He wanted me to be ready if I ever decided to become a football player.
So that's how you learned to run routes.
Yes. I learned to run routes being scared to get hit from these grown men. I guess that's where I get all my speed from, because I didn't want these guys tackling me.
And also, was that why? Because the one thing you were as a receiver, because you're not very big, like as far as big receivers go, right? You were very elusive. Rarely did a guy get a clean hit on you.
Yeah, and I think that just came with just, like I said, just growing up and then just like studying the game from guys who've played the game. And, you know, I was a huge fan of like Jerry Rice, Chris Carter, like growing up watching these guys play football. And I would just study just how they ran their routes and how they protected their bodies when they was going towards a defender. And so I just let that transition into my game.
Who had the biggest influence, do you think, on your football career?
I would say it would be my mom, because without my mom, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't be, you know, being recognized for all the accomplishments that I have, because, like I said, this is a lady that raised 11 kids, seven girls and 4 boys. And I've watched my mom come home from working, you know, 12, 14-hour shifts and can barely, like, take her clothes off, you know. So we used to have to go in sometimes and help her get undressed so she could, like, take a shower and just relax. So I credit all my accomplishments to my mom.
Now, your mom, Dave Jamison told me a great story. He said he never met a football player whose locker stall was more meticulous and clean as yours. And that is because you saw your mom work all the time. She worked she was a cleaning lady. Mm-hmm. And so you said, there's no chance she's coming home and cleaning after me.
Yes, and that's because some days I would, like, go to her job, and I would just, like, help her, like, clean, like, some of the rooms, like, help her and her other co-workers, like, just clean the rooms. And, you know, sometimes you would go in these rooms and just see how some of the guests would just leave these rooms. And these ladies are on a clock to have this room clean for, like, the next guests that are coming in. And so just watching her doing all this cleaning and doing all this scrubbing and cleaning up behind people, I say, you know what? I never would want to be that person.
Mookie Mitchell joins me. Big announcement for him and his family. He will go into the CFL Hall of Fame next year, along with Doug Brown, James West, and Rodney Harding, all defensive guys. You're the only offensive guy that goes in. So, you know, you basically raised a single parent, a mom, as you mentioned. You had 3 brothers, 7 sisters. What did your siblings, like, did they realize at a young age, you know, Mookie's maybe got something? You were the youngest, you were the baby. Were you kind of protected by them, or did you have to, you know, work your ass off even harder because you were the youngest of 11?
No, I really had to work at it. You know, I mean, I was protected with these guys when I went off to school, because I was the only, you know, sibling at that time that was off, that had that opportunity, got a scholarship, you know, to Texas Tech. And so these guys have always, my family have always supported me. They've always been like my biggest fans. And so after like Texas Tech and I got drafted, they was like, we just want to see how far our brother can take it. Like, you were the one that made it. Let's see if you can just continue, you know, your success and just live a good life.
You found out on September 30th. That you were getting, you know, you got a call from the commissioner.
Yes.
That you were going into the Hall of Fame, but you had to keep it quiet for basically 2 months. You were able to tell your wife, Gail.
Yes.
And that's it. Not even your 4 kids.
Couldn't tell them.
How difficult was that?
It was tough. It was really tough, because like getting some kind of news like that, like when I just can remember when I hung up the phone, I wanted to just call everybody that I knew, but it was a secret that you can't tell, because they didn't want it to leak. They didn't want it to leak to anybody that was like really attached to social media. And I know my kids are. Uh-huh. So that was just like that real killer. Huh. That I couldn't tell
them. Well, they
shouldn't
have told you 2 months in advance. That's just painful, man.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And, you know, I can't tell, like, brothers and sisters who have supported me all this time. These guys found out. I actually called my brothers and sisters Thanksgiving Day, just like the U.S. Thanksgiving.
Thursday.
When I was in the airport leaving Edmonton, going to Winnipeg. And everybody, I called them, put them on FaceTime, and I gave them the news. And I'm like, you guys, please, you cannot leak this. You can't, because this news is huge. And so it took everything in their power not to, like, pass it on to their kids, because my nieces and nephews, they're big with the Twitter and the Facebook and all that. So they really supported me. They respected that decision. And, like, the Friday after it was announced, it was all over Facebook. So I've been having, like, high school friends, high school teachers, everybody have been just reaching out, just congratulating me.
Your own kids, you have four children, twins, a boy and a girl who are 20, and then two other daughters who are 16 and 14. And your wife Gail was telling me a funny story how, you know, especially the girls when they were younger, you know, I don't want to go to a football game and sit outside when it's cold with dad. But as they've gotten older and all their friends are like, oh wow, Mookie Mitchell was your dad. Especially because you live full time in Edmonton, and they, of course, you won the Grey Cup in 2005. You know, a lot of their friends are well aware of who you are, and now suddenly, dad's football career is cool.
Yeah, and so right now, dad is getting harassed with trying to get a lot of Eskimo tickets now. You know, and when I was playing with the Eskimos, I could look up in the stands sometimes and see them just like typing and texting on their phones. You know, and so now, right now, it's like, can my, this friend get an autograph? Like, oh, you ain't want to get your friend the autograph years ago, huh? So.
Well, now you're a Hall of Famer. It'll be even more.
Yes, it is. It is. And I mean, like I said, I am just truly blessed and just honored, because I just can remember, like, during the ceremony, just being up on the stage and just looking out at guys that have already been inducted and just looking at some of the guys that have paved the way for me that's not in the CFL, or just players alone. That was teammates of mine that has not been inducted into the Hall of Fame. So, I mean, it's a real special, humbling moment.
Which CFL Hall of Famer that you met was the one where you're like, hey, wow, you know what? Now I'm on even level as that guy.
No, I don't think I would ever be. Like, a real good friend of mine, which is Pinball Clemens, that okay. Have been inducted. So I don't care if I go to church every day of the week. Just the status of Pinball. I mean, and he was right there. And it took so much of my power. Do you understand that I really had to look Penn off when I was sitting up on the stage?
You didn't want to cry?
No, I knew he probably would have spoiled it, because whenever we see each other, it's just like, you know, it's just like this brotherhood, you know. And Penn, like, as soon as I got off the stage, he's picking me up. So I really didn't want him to see my face, because I didn't want to spoil the moment, because I knew he would have probably been, oh, what are you doing here, this and that. Because I talked to him a couple of days before. And say, well, I'm just going down to the game. And I noticed he was trying to make eye contact with me when I was sitting at the table for the luncheon. So I kind of had to just look him off like a quarterback, you know?
So he's thinking you're just, did he know at the luncheon? Or does it not announce till you get on stage when you're at the luncheon?
Yeah, it didn't get announced until I got called to come up to the stage.
Okay, so even Pinball didn't know until you got called up on stage?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, while I was sitting there, and Penn was walking around greeting people while everybody was eating. So sure. I was trying to not make eye contact with him.
Darryl Mookie Mitchell joins us, inducted into the Hall of Fame this past was it Thursday or Friday? The ceremony.
Friday
afternoon was the ceremony. Because I saw you Thursday night. You didn't say anything.
Can't say a word. No. Can't say a word.
No. We're just in town. The Eskimos haven't been in town for a decade. You were on the last winning team. It made sense why you'd be there.
Yeah.
I got it. And we have a lot of Eskimo fans. In your career, you won two Grey Cups. You won it in your first year in 2000, and in 1997. And you're probably thinking, man, this is great. But then you didn't win again until 2005.
Yeah.
And you were obviously a big part of both of those teams. How different were those Grey Cups? Because, you know, early in your career to then the savvy veteran late in your career.
The first one, like I tell people all the time, would always be special. Just because growing up, you watching teams on every level, whether it's basketball, football, you watching a team win a championship. And as a young athlete, or just athlete period, you want to be a part of that feeling and that moment. And I can remember in 97, this team had just won the Grey Cup in 96. And I could just remember, like, all the guys and how excited they were the day that they received their rings. And so now I'm on a team that's predicted to go back to the Grey Cup. And so I'm like, okay, this could be something special. And I mean, we got off to a fast start. I think we jumped out like 8-9-0, and we pretty much controlled the East. And so I can just remember just like the positive attitudes that the guys had, the coaches had, like, hey, you're going to win your first Grey Cup. We're gonna do this. And so, and then going back to 05, it was more of that. It was still, you're going to always be excited with winning a Grey Cup. But to me, it felt like that 05 Grey Cup here, I was doing it for those guys who didn't have a Grey Cup, you know, like the Matthew Bertrands, you know, and because those guys wanted to know that feeling when that confetti is coming down, when the trophy is being presented. And so still to this day, I'm just so honored that I was part of that Grey Cup to just be a part of history.
In the 2005 Grey Cup, many people remember the 34-yard catch, right? Sliding over the middle, third down. When you look back in your career, and you made a lot of catches, was that the most important one?
I think that by far is the biggest catch I have ever made in my career. And the funny thing with that, I tell people all the time, and my wife was the first one that I told. I say, do you realize that I was so much into that game that I didn't realize that it was third down? I just can remember coming out of the huddle, and I can remember the DB that was covering me, he was shaded heavy inside. And I knew I had a corner route. And honestly, I thought Ricky was going to actually, when he rolled out, I thought he was going to just give it to Ed or Tucker because it was just third and four. I thought he was going to take the for sure, like, play. That's a huge risk trying to throw that ball 30
well,
yards
out. That's what I want to add. You thought it was second down, but so you're, okay, maybe. But
yeah.
It's third down, and you only need four, and you gain 34 yards.
So, I mean, that is just like the attitude that team had. Like, once we finished off that last game, we knew we had to go into a tough environment, like going down to Calgary. We knew we was going into another hostile environment going to play BC. So when we got over that hump in Calgary, we knew we had to be that complete team playing in BC. And the funny thing about this, only guys within our receiver core and the guys that was within our quarterbacks. I remember all that week in practice, one day, like the day before the game, it was me, Ed Hervey, Jason Tucker, Jay Moss, and Ricky. And he said, in order for us to win this game, we need Mookie and Ricky Ray to connect again. Because me and Ricky couldn't connect in Calgary on corner routes. Either the ball was overthrown, it was over short. And I remember Ed telling me and Ricky, he like, you guys got to work your magic. In order for us to beat Montreal, you guys are going to have to make a huge connection.
So and what'd you do? Did you practice more?
So the thing that I did like all that week in practice is just like, I've always was the athlete that always practiced fast. And so I was just telling Ricky, let's go back to what we did. When you see me like put my foot down, throw it, just throw it. And it happened on that third and fourth play. And it was actually like guys tell me right now that it was the play of the game, but it was so many plays that was made in that game to me that won that game for us.
Well, that was a huge one. The Tucker post route into the end zone, man, he was a pretty good route runner.
Yeah, that and now you know what I just like those guys. I would never trade any other players for guys like that because we decided that we was gonna do it and we rallied together on all phases of that game. That game is just that's one you'll never forget. I would never forget that game.
Daryl Mookie Mitchell joins me. I'm going to ask you to stick around for another segment to talk about your Hall of Fame career. And now we can say it's a legit Hall of Fame career. You will go in next year, and I guess it's symbolic. It's going to go back to where it all started for you. Ceremony, from what I understand, is going to be in Toronto next year where the Grey Cup is, so that'll obviously be very, very special for you. It's closer for your family in Florida, so I'm sure many of them will make it down. Remind you, we have a half an hour left today. It's day one. I know everybody's off to a little bit of a slow start for a month of giving. From the base, we have a fantastic package. It's 12-week training program. You can have and that's three times a week, by the way. So that's 36 training programs. You can either do the hockey dryland program for Bantam to college players. in the summer, or a 12-week power training program for sports or anyone looking just to build strength and power and quickness pretty much in any other sport, but it's not hockey specific for those. It's for all the other ones. So you can get that. You also get the two limited edition Oil King Teddy Bear Toss jerseys and a pair of seats to watch the Oilers and the Stars. Currently, George has it at an absolutely ridiculous deal of only $1,100. Let's please get that up. It's all for the Christmas Bureau. Make a bid at 10-1260, or you can call Mageau 444-1260.
Portions of this hour brought to you by Cougar Paint and Collision. They're independently owned and not a franchise, and they will always make you the priority. You don't even need an appointment. Stop in today for an estimate from a certified journeyman. 8810 Yellowhead Trail. That's Cougar Paint and Collision.
This is the Jason Greger Show on your home for Edmonton sports. TSN 1260.
5:33, very special guest sticking with me for one more segment in studio. A Hall of Famer going into the CFL Hall of Fame next Grey Cup in Toronto. So you got a lot of time to plan for this. You can talk about it. And as you mentioned, the youngest of 11, I'm guessing a lot of your family members might be making the trek down from Florida.
Yes, everybody has been calling now, you know, trying to find out like the exact date. So I've been telling them, like, as soon as I find out the date, I'll let you guys know.
Okay, so you don't have the exact date yet, but your wife, I'm assuming all four kids have said, Dad, I'm going to that.
Everybody's going to be there. The only thing that I was told when I was in Winnipeg from Mark DeNoble was that I think they're trying to do the induction the same day, which is that, you know, on the 27th.
As the Grey Cup?
That's the Grey Cup, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, like see how the announcement was made that Friday.
So they'll do the like on field kind of thing during the game?
Yeah, he didn't tell me like how they were gonna do it, but he was just saying like this exact day on this Friday we would do it, and then the Grey Cup would follow like those next 2 days.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you do it on the Friday. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. You wouldn't do it the same day as
not
the Grey Cup.
Day.
But no, that would be it's kind of unique because you know a lot of former players come in town anyway, so you'd have a lot of your teammates likely looking to say, well, I was gonna go anyway, but now I'll go for sure.
Yes.
Of all the, you talked about Ed Hervey and Jason Tucker and that conversation you had with Ray and Moss about you and Ray really needed to get on the same page for 05, and clearly it worked. When you go back to your rookie season with Doug Flutie, what was your first impressions of Flutie, you know, the quarterback? They had won, of course, the year before. Like, I'm sure you'd heard about him from Boston College, but Flutie's one of the best athletes we've ever seen in the CFL.
Yeah, he is. And I can just remember like the first like couple of days of training camp, I'm actually in the huddle with a guy that I've watched, you know, beat my University of Miami Hurricanes. His little miracle play. I wanted to punch him. You know? You know, because I can remember as a kid like just crying. I said, man, do you realize that you made me cry? Like, that play, that made me cry. Like, my family, we're huge University of Miami fans. And just to see, I can remember the ball being in the air and when the receiver caught it. And I just looked at him, and he just laughed like, hey, man, you know, like, who is this dude right here? Said he wanted to punch me. But, I mean, I didn't tell him that until we really got to know each other. And, I mean, the first couple of days, like I said, I was just pretty much trying to just learn the chemistry, you know, just learn his demeanor, you know, because that was the attitude that was around there. Like, just like Doug will lead and just like just follow his lead, you know. And so when it all started in Toronto, I was actually an ex-receiver, like lined up like at Ed's position. Like, I was outside behind Paul Mazzotti. And so the offensive coordinator, John Jenkins, probably 3-4 days in the training camp, came up to me in a lunchroom and like, hey, we want to move you in a slot receiver. So like any other receiver or any other player, you want to learn your position first. So now I had to like stop eating lunch, run over to the locker room, grab my playbook, and start studying like the inside slot receiver plays, the trees, and all that. And so they was Coach Jenkins and Coach Matthews was like, hey, don't worry about it. Like while I was on the field stretching, because I know you probably remember like one of the legendary receivers, DK Smith.
Oh yes.
DK just stood behind me and he was like, okay, since he knew the offense, he was like, okay, you got this route here. You got like a 10-yard in, you got a 10-yard out until I learned it. And then he was like real instrumental with me. Like whenever we would have a break, we would go and he would just, you know, teach me how to do the waggle and to time it up. And once I got the timing down, that's when, you know, he kind of just threw me in there all the time with like the first team. And so the first preseason game, Doug knew nothing about me. So I kept like coming open. I kept beating my man or whatever. And so after the game, after that day after the game, Coach Matthews came in the locker room and he got me and he pulled me in his office. And he was like, I want you to just sit right here and wait. And then so he went and got Flutie. And he made me and Flutie both sit down and we watched that game against Hamilton. And he was like, well, Flutie, why did you not throw him the ball on this? Like, even if I was the first read, he didn't throw me the ball. And he was like, hey, man, I didn't. He's like, Coach, I want to apologize to both of you guys because I didn't know him. He only knew Mazzotti, Drummond, Pinball. So those guys got, like, all the passes in that first game. And I just remember Flutie telling me, and that means he said it'll never happen again. And so days after that, we're practicing, getting ready for Montreal, the second preseason game. And I got news that my oldest brother got shot. And I remember going to Coach Matthews saying, like, hey, I need to go to Miami. I got to go see my brother. You know, I'm like, you know, family's first. And Coach Matthews was telling me that, hey, I like what you've done in camp so far, like in practice-wise, but I need to see what you can do in a game. And so I say, Coach, just do me this favor. Just get me out of here. Get me to Miami and just – I'll meet you guys in Montreal. Just get my ticket from Miami to Montreal. And I remember when I made it to Montreal, by the time I made it to the stadium, the team is already dressed, warming up. I ran in the locker room, and I came back out. And I remember Coach Matthews got me on all special teams returning, and I played the whole game. And like 3-4 touchdowns later, history was made.
So you played special teams as the return guy.
Yeah, because Coach Matthews, what he was trying to do, he said, I'm going to see if I can break you. So he had me doing kickoff return, punt return, and I was going straight to offense. Like, I didn't miss a snap. And so I can remember, like, the ending of the third quarter, the fourth quarter.
You're just bagged.
I never in my life ever felt like this as an athlete. I couldn't physically pull myself up. So I went to Pinball and Robert Drummond. And I say, if I catch a ball, just please pick me up off the ground. I could not pick myself up off the ground. If anybody have footage of that game, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. I was able to burst to the line. And after I would catch the ball and get tackled, I could not pick my own self up off the ground. And that's the day that I respected the size of this CFL field.
Daryl Mukey Mitchell joined us, and Don Matthews kind of quite the hard ass to want to do that for you. And I'm guessing there was a lot of motivation. You're like, man, this is my chance. And you know, I just visited my brother who got shot, and you know, the coach. Did you feel like you owed it to Matthews because he gave you that opportunity? Because some coaches might have just said, well, you know what? Yeah, sure, kid, you can go, but you're probably losing your chance because you only get one game to impress.
Yes. Exactly. And that's why I had so much respect for Coach Matthews, even still to this day, is because he's, for guys who have played with him, we all know that he's that player coach. We know a lot of, like, ex-players have said, like, he's arrogant and he's this and that. But if you, to me, and guys who've been on his teams, if you're one of his guys, he will go to war for you. And I can remember, like, anything that I wanted in Toronto. I mean, it was so, me and him had done built a relationship too, that he's had done started calling me his son, you know. And so, like, Coach Matthews is, to me, was just always that real, like, that player's coach, that coach that you dream of having. Like, you can go do all your little partying that you want to do, but you better show up on game day. Because if not, I'm going to release you. And I think that that's how professional sports should be, because we're all grown men. And he's not gonna treat you like a 5-year-old. I mean, if you want to be a part of one of his teams, you're going to have to make some real good decisions.
Mookie Mitchell joins us. You were a guy who never really got in trouble off of the field, or if you did, it was always kept quiet. But, you know, there has been guys who have kind of gone off the path a little bit at times. Mm. And your teammates always spoke very highly of you as always, you know, Dave Jameson joked about being the very clean guy, but you were very competitive, but a quiet, understated guy, right? Not a real big vocal guy in the locker room.
No, I'm not. I'm not one of, like, your vocal leaders. I'm not. And I've always liked being around guys like that. Like, to me, like Ed himself, Ed was like a vocal leader. Like, me and Jason Tucker, we're going to lead by, like, our performance on the field. Yeah, we're not the rah-rah guys. No, and it's And Ed made plays on both. Like he knew how to pull you up, and he would his presence was known on the field. But me and Tuck made our presence known without speaking. We would just go out and just make plays, and we would get you to rally behind us.
Who were, like, Ed Hervey was the leader on that team in 2005. You had some vocal guys on defense. Who was your favorite teammate? Not your best teammate, but just a guy who was, man, that guy was funny. You know, football was better when he was around in the locker room just because he was comical or a good guy. Do you have anybody who stands out?
I have, and he's a real good friend of mine, you know. Well, I guess he would soon be one of these legends, and it's Alfred Payton. I mean, he's always made plays. He's always joked, and he's always like that guy. Like, even when you had a bad game, you get back on the plane, he's always trying to just boost everybody's spirits. Even when you just, you know, you don't want to talk to nobody, you don't want to see, you know, because if you felt you had that bad game, he always was that guy that would say, hey, man, you know, there's another game. We can, you know, and I mean, he's always been a good friend of mine, and I really keep in contact with him.
You mentioned earlier the catch in 2005, maybe the greatest catch you ever had. Is there one game that stands out in your mind that you felt was, from start to finish, your best game you ever played as a pro in the CFL?
Now, why are you going to make me do that? Like, my best game ever, it was against the Eskimos in 98. So, I like, you know.
That's all good. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it was actually that game. It was that game in 98 because I remember it became a shootout and we end up like winning that game like late in the game.
What'd you have for numbers? Do you remember? Come on now. Yeah, remember. What
was
they?
It was 16 catches for 220 in yards.
How many TDs?
I didn't get a TD.
No,
that was what's crazy.
No TDs.
No TDs, man. Hey, man. Edmonton got a good defense. That's a good defense.
Well, yeah. So good that they allowed you to have 16 catches for 220. Yeah. Wow. Do you ever, any of the Eskimos, when you came to Edmonton, were they on that team that you lit up defensively? Do you ever have, you know, fun now as teammates kind of joking with them in the locker room?
Well, the guys that was on that team, Chris was on that team. Who else was on that team? I don't know if Shannon was on that team. I don't think Shannon was on that team. Shannon wasn't on that team. It was our little cornerback, man out of Texas.
Oh,
Malcolm Frank. Yeah, Malcolm, because me and Malcolm used to always tease about that. And Mobley.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he probably took that one pretty hard.
Yeah. They didn't like that.
Daryl, a huge honor, I know, for you and for your entire family, all your siblings, of course, your lovely wife and your four children. Enjoy it next November. You've got a lot of time to plan. It's overdue. And hopefully when you're in Toronto, the Argonauts will wake up and they'll put you on the wall of honor, long overdue for you to be honored by that team. They're leading receiver in every category as well. So really appreciate you making time for us today and continued success in Edmonton, doing all you do at Crossroads and helping out young kids.
All right. Thank you.